Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours on this fairly chilly day, but it still looks, the sun's out, so if you're particularly out in the car or something, it's quite a good day. Anyway, I'm here for 2 hours. We've got a couple of interviews. We've got Bronwyn Cole coming in from the Queensland Fruit Fly between 1 and 2, but now we'll have with me Sue and... Sue Thompson, and she's from the Lilydale and District Historical Society. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you very much, Alan, and welcome. Good morning to the listeners.
Very good. It's good to have you in, Sue. Now, we all know that there are such things as historical societies and all that, but first of all, I'd like to just go a little bit deeper and find out, is the mission of a historical society, first of all, to go out and find the artefacts or of the past, or is it just to mainly to catalogue it, or is it to have displays, or is it all three?
It's really all three, because they all complement each other. So history, I mean, people have to realise that history is 5 minutes ago in your... in your terms, it's 5 minutes ago.
Yep.
So history is evolving and coming on all the time. So at our society, and I think all of the societies in Yarra Ranges, and I must say there's 17 history heritage groups within the Shire of Yarra Ranges, which is an amazing number of groups. And they all collect, as you're talking about, and catalogue. And the reason why we collect is that's to preserve that history. Many people get phone calls, like we do, of people who are cleaning out parents' homes, grandparents' homes. They find things relevant to our area and they contact us and say, are you interested in them? Because otherwise they'll go to the tip.
Yep.
So that's a key role that we all have. And the writing and researching of history is another very important element. And
so do you have members of your society that actually do write the history themselves, that do the research?
Yeah, that's one of our biggest components of our historical society at Lilydale, and I think most groups as well, is carrying out research for their own society's projects coming up, be they displays or whatever, but also we get a lot of inquiries, and people are particularly now that they're doing so many family histories, they find a certificate that says their great-great-grandfather was born at Lilydale, so immediately they jump online and find Lilydale and contact us and ask us if we have any information about them.
So how do you decide which ones you're going to research? But do you research everything that comes into the society, or do you sort of only do it when you've got a number of items about the same person? Or how do you decide which ones you're going to research?
Well, it's a matter of, and this might sound a bit trite, but we operate out of the old Lilydale Courthouse.
Yep.
And as a result, we have to pay all the utility costs we share with the University of the Third Age that we share the building with. So we have to generate income to provide the internet, the telephone and things like that. So if someone sends in a research request for information, the first thing we do is remind them that there is a fee. And that a lot of people then don't pursue it any further because they don't want to pay. And that's fine. But those that do, we get a budget from them and we find out exactly what they're looking for. It's not just, do you know anything about my great-grandfather? We need to know when the grandfather lived in the district, whether he was married. We need to find all that out. As much from them as they can give us, we can then go from there. So if he was a farmer, for instance... we have rate books, so we can go and check back through the rate books if we've got a date. So you start putting a bit of flesh onto the bones of a person and puts the story to the person that they didn't have. Also, our photographs, a lot of people want photographs, and if we have photographs, there's a fee for giving them a digital copy of that. And we do that sort of work as well. So it's labour intensive, but we have an hourly fee, and then we have charges for things like photographs as well.
So when you do research, like there's none of your group that just say, oh, look, I think I might do a research on Fred Nerk. Most of your research is done as a request from somebody, is that right?
Well, yes, there's that element, but there's also members of our society who do their own individual research into their own families. Some of them, when we're planning an exhibition, for instance, our display for the next year is going to be on migrants. And bearing in mind that migrants include the Swiss, the English, the Irish, the Scottish, the Italians, and the Dutch, and Chinese. So we're going to be members are going to be researching that over the next few months, so as we can get the material together for our display.
All right, look, I've just got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more. Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 23 minutes past 12. Can't believe how quick the time goes. I'm talking to Sue from the Lilydale Historical and, where's their full name? Historical Society, yeah. I messed that up. Sue, before we go on, how long have you been involved with the group yourself?
I joined the society in... 1986. I've been up there a long while, yes.
Yep. So the other thing is, when you're talking about doing research, you were talking about, you know, we're coming up for the refugees or whatever group it is. Is it each person does a part of that research, or is it only one person does all the research, or how do you coordinate research?
Well, if we're doing research on a project, we sit down and people take one of the themes, and it's their job to then, we've got to find images, because pictures tell a thousand words.
Absolutely.
Find the images and do the research as well. And with displays, we only have a limited amount of text, of course. It's not a huge amount, but each person takes that element, and that's their baby right the way through. And that's good, because we've got a lot of resources internally within the society, because we've been going since 1971. And they can use our archive. We've got a very extensive archive, files of all sorts of things, and we've got a huge photographic collection. So the two together, they can then do the research.
All right, so pardon me, that they basically do a lot of the stuff in-house. Is there anywhere else where you can go to, like you're talking about images, if you want an image of, say, well, we'll say Warrialik in 1820 or something, and you haven't got it. Is there somewhere else where you can go to get that material, or how do you get it?
Yes, you can. If we were after a Warrialik image, which we wouldn't be because it's not in our collecting area, hypothetically, if we were, we would approach the Upper Yarra Historical Society and possibly also Healesville Historical Society and see if they've got an image relevant to what we're looking for.
All right, so you said that Warrialik's not in your area, so where is your area? Where does it cover?
Okay, our area covers Seville, Gruya, Yering, Coldstream, Lilydale, Montrose, Sylvan.
All right, still a pretty big area, isn't it? Mm.
Well, so, we used to be, going back in the history, until amalgamations, when we started off in 71, we were the Lilydale End District Historical Society, which we still are, and that was because we were the only historical society in the old Shire of Lilydale.
Oh, were you?
So we covered everything and collected for everything, and we were formed because the Shire Centenary was coming along in 1872. They were formed, the Shire of Lilydale was formed. Their centenary was coming up in 1972, and the year before, the council decided they were going to produce a book, but they didn't have any information, so they got a society together, and then they planned a great big celebratory weekend, which the society ran the displays. And they got objects and displays and all sorts of things. And then, unfortunately, afterwards, when the exhibition finished, the people didn't want the stuff back. So the society suddenly had a collection that it hadn't been looking for, and that's how the society was it was actually formed earlier, but then it started having its own collection. So, so it went from there.
So when you said at one stage you did all this area, and now you don't, at a stage like when the amalgamations happen and that some of these other groups pop up, do you then share what you had on that area with them, or do you still keep your own material?
Okay. What's happened over the years since 71, when we were formed, other groups have formed.
Yep.
I mean, Montrose Historical Society was formed, sponsored by us. Mount Dandenong was also sponsored by our society, and Mount Evelyn History Group also. We didn't sponsor it, but it grew out of that. They know what we've got, because it's all catalogued in our collection already, for the different townships. They all know that we have these other collections and can call on them at any time.
So if they were doing a particular research or a particular display, they would just come to your organisation and you'd be able to they could access?
We would be able, they can access it. But once they were all formed, we stopped collecting in those areas and referred people to those groups.
That sounds fair. I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Well, I've been waiting and it's a Saturday night. And I call up the boys who will be cruising tonight. They got a party on and they say it's gonna be alright. Well, we park the Custer on somebody's front lawn. And the boys and I, we sneak in the back door. We mingle in like we've done it a million times before.
On the prowl,
that's how we get our fun.
On the prowl,
don't you tell my mom. Someone started a fight. And I struck a match. I nearly died of fright. Know what I saw? Good golly green. I wasn't looking at the police chief.
On the prowl.
Now I've seen it all.
On the prowl.
The policeman's ball.
On the prowl.
Oh, they were everywhere.
On the prowl.
So I ran for the stairs, prowling with the boys. Came on, but we were gone. I made it to the door at half the speed of light. Got to my car, I nearly died. There was a policeman sitting silent inside.
On the prowl,
I didn't know what to say.
On the prowl,
you know crime does not pay.
On the prowl,
I knew I was done.
On the prowl,
'cause he was wearing a gun, prowling with the boys on a Saturday night.
Show us your license.
Yeah, well, sorry, I have no license.
Don't give me any of that bull.
No, I'm not.
Show us your license. I saw you in there, kid, and you were with the rest of us.
Welcome back to Community Connections. I'm talking to Sue from the Lilied Island District Historical Society. Sue, you've been involved there for quite some time. What's the most interesting research project that you personally have been involved with?
The most interesting one was a project we got federal government funding to do, which was a project called Gun Alley. Now, research often, when you're going through newspapers and things, it features the upper echelons of people, people doing things, people who are important members of the community. With our Gun Alley project, it's a little street called John Street in Lilydale. It's a back street.
Yeah, no, John Street, yep.
Yep, and that's the Gun Alley from the Alinda Creek down to Hutchinson Street. And all the workers' cottages were there. They were all workers. They worked very hard, but nobody knew anything about them. So we set about, one of our members grew up there. She used to tell the story often with the Alinda Creek flooding. They knew that when it was raining, they just opened the back door, opened the front door, put all the stuff up on their table and wait for the water to run through the house, drain out, and then put their furniture back. And they were the hard workers. They were who worked at Cave Hill, or they worked on the railways. And so we researched all the the property owners, each of the houses, and each of the property owners, and we wrote the story about each of the property owners.
That'd be fascinating.
And so we produced a book out of that, plus we put it up online. But unfortunately, technology's changed, and we've got to now redo it and put it back up onto our website. But fascinating stories about ordinary people. And
did you find any stories amongst those that stood out amongst the other from the others?
Well, they were, we've got a couple of video, we did some movies as well, bits of what do you call them, YouTube pieces. And the funny story is about the betting shops and how some of the kids were the runners for the betting.
Really?
The guys that were running the bets in Lilydale, and they had a job every Saturday to do this and run the money here and run the tickets there to these different people within the town. That went really well until one of them got caught, but the coppers let them off in the end. But that was the SP booking system was running very, very well in Lilydale.
I think the SP bookies seemed to be run everywhere though too, didn't they? They seem to be just a part of the times. And I guess by using young kids, then the police aren't going to really charge the young ones, are they?
No, they used the kids, and the kids got pocket money, which for the kids of John Street was very important, that they earned money wherever they could earn them. And the other one was rabbiting. They'd go out rabbiting, they'd come back and they'd sell their rabbits and things like that. And the kids were doing that as well as the adults. And, you know, you get a real feel of it was tough. It was a tough life for them, and that to make every post a winner.
So you were able to find who was in each of the houses, or there were some you just couldn't do?
No, we managed to find all of them. We had to do, it's a bit of a side issue, but that land was all subdivided. It belonged originally to John Hutchinson, who built the Olinda Hotel. And he unfortunately passed away after he was kicked by his horse. And it was subdivided, but it was done under a system called the Old Law System. Whereas it should have been done under what they call the Torrens system, which is our current title system.
Right.
So we had to, unfortunately, spent quite a few days in the city going through the old law records to find out who all the various owners were. And some of those properties still are on old law titles.
But what's the difference between that, sir?
Okay, with the old law, if you've got a property now, you get a title issued, which has got a volume and folio number on it. And on the back of that or on the foot of that is the previous title, which is a volume and folio, so you can trace it back. Whereas in the old law, they've got a memorial number, and each time it changes hands, the complete research has to be done and documented for all the way back for that to ensure that they've got the proper lineage. And it's all handwritten in documents and vellum stuff and all that. It's now been moved, unfortunately, down to the other side of Melbourne, Laverton now. But it was in the city originally. But it takes a bit of fiddling to actually trace, and they slice a piece of land off, so they have to redo it all again and trace them all back. And it's a very complicated system.
So that's still available, is it, for groups like yourself to go and see it?
Yes, you can. You can. You've got to know what you're doing, but yes, you still can go to Laverton and organise to go and get access to those documents. And there are still solicitors still have old law searches who go in and do the title searches for clients and things. As I said, there's a few properties still got the old law system, which is very cumbersome. Very cumbersome.
So some of those blocks you're saying are still under those same titles, are they?
It is up to the owner to convert it. So early on, those that chose to convert it paid a lot of money to have it done, because they had to, as I said, search it all the way back and pay somebody to do it so as they could then get a title issued, because they have to be able to prove that it's their title, that's their property, that they've bought it and paid for it. And these days we sort of have transfers of land, you know, when you buy a property, you sign a contract, all of that is recorded. It's in the old law system, it was only written down as a memorial. So you didn't have the actual documentation. So it was a fascinating exercise to do. A bit frustrating, but fascinating.
It would be. So how many people were in there from your group doing it, and for how long?
That was a 12-month project that we worked on, and there's probably six of us did it. We got a grant for it, and then we produced the book as well,
yeah.
Which of course generated some additional income for us. And we did videos, audio, video, and photographs as well. So that's a little project I've got to get back up and on our website. So
always plenty to do. All right, we'll take another quick break, and we'll be back with more.
She had some smile. She took a standard pose and she presented herself. She had sultry eyes. She made it perfectly plain that she was his for a price. But he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man, and my bite is much worse than my bite. He said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might.
Telling me that the anniversary of, is it Melba's death or Melba's birth?
No, it's the anniversary of Melba's birth, and she was born the 19th of May 1861.
It's 2 days' time, isn't it?
Yes, it's coming up in 2 days' time.
And so have you got any sort of special things up on your website or something for that or what?
Well, we actually have the world's only dedicated Nellie Melba website.
Well, she lived here, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, she was part of our community and promoted Australia in a way that most people don't understand. I mean, people, when she first went overseas in 1886, we hadn't long given up being a convict settlement for the Brits. And she was just such a proud Australian. And as she used to say, you know, she wrote in her Melodies and Memories, her autobiography, you know, to understand me, you have to understand, first and foremost, I'm an Australian. And she was our first international superstar.
Yep.
She was a Kylie Minogue of her time in the field of opera, which was the pop songs of the time. And she's the most amazing person. Not only she had natural talent, absolute talent, but her memory still lives on today. The Melba Opera Trust has been established and supported by Melba's family. In a big way, and lots of other philanthropists as well. But that's teaching young scholarship winners all of the skills you need to be an opera singer or a pianist in the international world. Melba went off over to, in 1886, went over to England as a greenhorn. I mean, she didn't even know how to manage money.
She
knew nothing. She just knew she wanted to sing. And she had to learn as she went along. And she was always determined to help people. And she had lots of protégés over the years that travelled with her and learnt from her. And the Melba Opera Trust is very much reflecting that with the training and the business skills and how to manage your own affairs, how to plan your travel, how to read contracts.
And, of course, travelling back in those days would have all been by ship too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, she travelled. It was a three-month trip going backwards and forwards. That's why she didn't come back to Australia until 1902, because it was just too far for her to travel. And, of course, she was still establishing herself and she was spending 6 months in Europe and then going over and doing the American season as well. So she couldn't get back until 1902. Yeah. But it was a long voyage, and she must have just about gone bonkers sitting on the... on the ship, you know, in the first class, because she'd be like a caged lion, I would think.
Because her father was a businessman in Lilydale too, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah. Her father was David Mitchell, who established the Cave Hill Quarries.
Yeah, I thought he did. Mm. Now, you wanted to talk a bit about lobbying, some of the lobbying you're doing.
I was just mentioning before, people think historical societies are only about the past and the history and doing the research, and we're actually a lot more than that, all of the societies now, because of the heritage components, are getting involved with council, in particular with heritage overlay, doing research. And also things like the place plans that are being developed now for each of the townships of the Shire Yarra Ranges. Mm. We've got to make sure there's a heritage recognition in every one of those place plans. Yeah. So I'll give you an example. We've been heavily involved with the Lidar Railway Station, the new station. And, I mean, we lobbied very hard to get some of the red bricks that were local red bricks made by a massive... We had eight brickworks operating in Lilydale at one time. And we wanted those bricks incorporated within that new building to recognise the past and embed it into the future. So it adds to the story of the design of the station. We had a bit of a battle over that, but we won that one. And it's the same with the rusty sides on the top of the railway bridge. That links back into the old Warburton Railway Bridge on the east end of town, and that matches that sort of thing. So it reflects the old railways and bringing it through to the new railway station. So we battle this all the time to try and get this sort of thing to happen and be reflected in the town, just to tell the story.
One more quick break and we'll be back with more with who.
We'll be right back.
listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where the time is 12 minutes to 1, and we're talking to Sue from the Lilydale Historical Society. I guess, Sue, like everybody else, you're always looking for volunteers, are you?
Well, I'm glad you actually mentioned that, Alan. We're always looking for volunteers. And look, the volunteers don't need to have they need to be interested. They don't have to be old-time residents who know their history. Yep. They just have to be interested in history and want to learn and want to meet people and want to do some research or whatever. We try and find out from each of the volunteers that when they first join us what they would like to do, because it's better they do something that they're happy doing they want to do and let them just work their way through the system. I mean, we've got some volunteers that drive from one volunteer drives from Springvale and comes up to us. And
was that someone, what's their connection here? Did they live here or?
No, they, because they're on that, I don't know what the system's called, but instead of working for the Dole, they get to the community, the 30 hours a fortnight community work. And he does the full 30 hours with us, and he's indexing at the moment the cemetery records, plus doing other material when he's in the courthouse. So he comes into the courthouse, and then he also works from home. But that's the choices that we give people plenty of options, because we want to encourage them and build a sense of history, you know, in our newer members of the community.
So do you also want people, like, on the days you're open to work
yes,
in the centre?
Yeah, well, we have a policy of having two volunteers at any one time, and we operate 3.5 days a week out of the old Lilydale courthouse.
That's a fair amount, because some of them are only open a couple of times a month, aren't
they? That's right. Well, we do that on purpose, because people want different times, so it's Friday afternoons and all day Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So from 11 till 4 on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we're open. So, everyone's put on with experienced volunteers who know what's happening. But they do learn a lot. You know, we have people indexing our files, and they are reading these articles about all this, and they get so enthralled with it, and they start to understand, you know, what we are today was created in the past. Who created it? Why? Why do we all have the street trees in Lilydale? Because the founding people wanted shade. For their horses, so they plant all these beautiful English trees. Yes. So that's why we've got all those trees, and they're the simple stories that the background that we need to understand coming forward into the future.
What age group do you find that roughly that are more interested in history? Is it the younger ones, or is it mainly middle-aged people who are looking back, or the older people are looking right back?
Sadly, it tends to be the older people.
Does it?
we have some in their we have some in their 60s that have just retired, or gone to part-time work or whatever, and are transitioning. Yep. So that's good. We've had a couple of young students come along, but they find it a bit more difficult because they're not with lots of other young people. We'd love to get some young people in, because they're so skilled with the computers and things like that. They're wonderful with the computers, and we sit there in awe of them, you know.
Yeah.
Even my great-granddaughter can do, and she's only 3, she can do things I can't do on her phone.
Do you find that there's an uplift in people trying to find out more about their past, or is it sort of plateaued?
No, it's absolutely booming.
Is it?
Purely through your ancestry.com and those sort of family search and those sorts of things, people doing their family history. But they can go onto Ancestry, they can get all the information they like, but they basically get birth, deaths and marriages. They don't get the actual story of the people.
Yep.
And they then turn to their local historical societies to put the bones on their ancestors, if you like. And we get a lot of that.
That's fair enough. Do you find also that some people find stuff that they really didn't want to know about their about their ancestry?
We actually did some research for somebody, yeah. And before I sent it to them, I did warn them that it's not a good story.
Right.
And they said, no, that's fine. We're paying you to do the research. Yeah. We want to know. And so we sent them the material, and they were very grateful for it. Yeah. It wasn't it wasn't a blitz of murder and all sorts of things. Oh, yes, a couple of things like that.
Sue, look, it's been terrific having you in. Now, if we've got people who have listened in today, if they want to volunteer, if they want to find out more, how are they going to find out more about the Lilydale Historical Society?
Okay, we have a website that is www.lilydalehistorical.com.au. I'll just say that again.
Yeah.
www.lilydalehistorical.com.au, or they can email me at info@lilydalehistorical.com.au, or they can phone me on 0475 219 884. That's 0475 219 884.
And you've also got a Facebook page?
We have a Facebook page. It's simply Lilydale and District Historical Society.
Can't get much closer than that, no. or easier than that, can you?
No.
Sue, look, it's fascinating to have you in. What's your current display?
Our current display is past and present, and we feature things like a butcher's shop of the past and a butcher's shop today. It's all photographic because we have to keep the courthouse space open for the U3A for their activities.
Right.
So we've got stories of all different businesses and transport and all that on housing, doctors, all those sorts of things that are up there. So, and we've got a wonderful one on the Lilydale Railway Station. So if anybody wants to know the history of the railway station, we've got lots of photos up on one of the boards with the drawing, schematic drawing of the station.
Oh, terrific.
Back in the 40s and 50s, yep.
Unfortunately, Sue, I've got to go. The news is knocking on the door, so thanks very much for coming and telling us all about it.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks.